The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line today. Open line through until 1 o'clock. Call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Well, this huge, huge development on the Lord Street bus station gets a step closer. Plans for the 12-storey multi-purpose facility on the site of Lord Street bus station have been approved. The planning committee was split 3 votes for, 3 against, and the chair of the committee, Rob Callister, MHK, had the deciding vote and chose to back the proposals. Multi-screen cinema, bus facility, 85 apartments. The original, I mean, they were slated to be knocked back. The recommendation was to knock them back because of the lack of affordable housing or the payment to solve that situation and open spaces. But anyway, the committee have decided it, they've considered, and well, there we are. Looks like it's going to happen. Well, as I say, it looks going to, the planning permission has been granted. Whether or not it gets built or how long it takes to get built, that will take a real chunk of money to actually happen. Any thoughts on this? If you haven't seen the proposals yet, just go to manxradio.com. There's a big AI-generated illustration of what it's going to look like alongside the Barbary Coast, but it's big. It's a real signature statement, and it will be a heck of a view from the top flats there. So any thoughts? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Well, lots of messages that were left over from Friday. The shops are also undercover, apparently, says Nita in Douglas. I hope this monstrosity of a building is refused, because this was WhatsApper, I think, 068. Sorry, WhatsApper 068. It has been approved. It will be horrible, overwhelming the surrounding areas. Some areas will never see sunshine again. Why did they knock down the original bus station? Well, it's a bit late to worry about that. We need a proper bus station, not a skyscraper. Well, it's got permission. It's no good hoping for a decent bus station, says 753. And there's over 8,000 empty properties here. We need to fill those first. Well, let's face it. I mean, there are two sides to this. It's big. It's going to be intrusive. It's going to change the landscape. It's going to change the skyline, certainly, of Douglas. However, that place has been appalling for years, hasn't it? Since the bus station was knocked down, it's been one thing and another, and now it's going to be something. May not be something you like, maybe you will like it, but it is going to be something. And you have to jump one side or the other. Do you prefer a hole in the ground or something? Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Just listen to that. It's going to cause a lot of problems in so much, you know, for people. People going to object to it. There's other people going to be in favour. I can honestly say I'm sitting on the fence because we've already got several areas down there that were bought and supposed to be going to be developed, coming from the Trafalgar Hotel right through to the Lifton Bridge. We've got the Birdcage in Duke Street, and that's only two that I can think of. But just hope against hope that are sufficient funds in the kitty to complete this, because it's been reduced gradually down from a hotel to various other aspects that's going to go on the site. I can remember that as a car park originally with iron railings around it and going back to the 1950s. Magdalene with the Circus on it. But not the recent circus, but the real old one. But you've not only got the Lord Street car park, you've got all that area that was knocked down in Middlemarch. And when you come off the boat, that's the first thing that's greeted you is dereliction.
Yeah.
And then where the Keith Lord knocked down the Citadel.
Yeah.
Okay, supposedly it's going to be a hotel going up there. And the old Lord Street flats on the right-hand side going up have been sold. How long are they going to stay in a, well, in the form that they're standing at the moment, semi-derelict? So to get off the boat, drive up through Lord Street, it's like driving through a bombed-out area.
Yeah.
So this place, if, and I hope, if it's completed, will make a big difference to that area.
I'm trying to remember, Howard, weren't the old swimming baths on Ford Street at the back of the Middlemarch site?
Yes, where the bank is now.
Yeah.
Because I can remember going to a swimming gala down there, the Nobles Baths. All they were all wooden structure, and I can still see it in my mind's eye, all painted blue. And I can remember going down there. It was a long time ago, obviously, because it was the Regal Cinema was also there.
Yeah.
And if elderly people can remember, the tourist board used to be there.
Yes, with Len Bond.
Leonard Bond, that's the man, and he lived in. Breathe the tourist industry then. But we did have a lot of people coming to the island. But that was, well, the booking spades, 69 onwards, they started to die away. People could travel much further. And as it is today, you can travel there much cheaper. But I just hope there's sufficient when people who are passing this planning and the people that's in charge of the system have made or are making inquiries and assurances that there is sufficient money or there will be in the kitty so we don't end up with another birdcage, although that's, the plans have changed for that at the present moment, and it may just get built. But we can't afford to have a place with lots of steel built up and nothing getting done.
And that will be a lot of steel for that building.
It will be, yes. Well, we only have to look at the steel where the alongside the old Villiers site. And how long was that empty? And the county were going to make it a town square out of that.
20 years, I think that's been vacant.
It will be, yep, it will be. And I think that was AXA that was first on the site with that, the greenhouse, which was never matched to the plans that were there, not honestly anyway.
Well, we'll wait and we'll watch and see, because as you say, getting planning is one thing, getting the funding in place to actually build the thing, it will have to go out to tender, and obviously then that will be a big job and that will cost a lot of money. So let's hope whoever's behind it has got the funding in place and something can happen.
Yeah, well, this has been going on because before COVID, which you could say 2020, so we got 5-6 years down the line, and that was where the bus station, as we always say, and we used to go in there with the coaches and the buses. They had various ways and means for the buses to drive in and back out. But it was never successful in a sense, because there was no real facilities there. The little sweet shop then became a club. It was the driver's refreshment room, which eventually moved down to the old, well, the new police station. They moved into there. I don't know where they use now. But it is something that needs doing, because it's an abysmal looking area at the moment when you come off the boat. And that's the first thing that greets you, and you think, oh my God, what have I come to?
And I think that's part of it, Howard. We get used to it. It's almost like the elephant in the room. It's like, you know, the piece of carpet that's torn or the piece of wallpaper that's coming off the wall. You go on so long, you don't notice it. But new visitors will notice the fact that we're surrounded by derelict sites.
Well, and a lot of them, particularly around the Douglas area. As I say, you go across the Lifton Bridge and down where the Trinidad Asphalt used to be, well, that was a coal board down there, and all the way down through to the Trafalgar, which is looking sad, and even when you go down through a little bit further towards Wolseley's and then down to the roundabout at the old tyre garage, it's a sad-looking area. Yet they spent tens of thousands of pounds putting the festoon lighting up there, you know, to illuminate the derelict site.
Well, I see Dandara have started building those flats already at Lake Road.
Oh, yes, yes. I see they took part of the stone wall down, and they now have concrete slabs there to prevent water ingress from the river in case of flood. But all that area was notably, and I can remember in the old Villiers Hotel, water. I used to go down there to deliver the oil, and you went in the back, what we used to call the Villiers Yard, and went down into under the building, and the water was there coming up through. And those shops, etc., that are where the bank is, where Cycle Place, down on the quayside, used to always be flooded. And when the tide went back out, the water went out with it. So they're going to have to be very careful what they build down there. Because they extended into the harbour in 1957, where they put and extended the berth so to get the larger vessels in for the coal, etc. But it's due for building on. It's a sad day that it was left as long as it has been. That's all. It's just hope is sufficient, and it's not another one of these ones where they make promises, and we've got drawers full of empty promises.
Okay. All right, Howard. Thanks for calling today.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye now. 17 minutes past 12. I'm so glad the planning has been approved. This is Frank. The Palace Cinema is ancient and needs to be demolished. The reason I never go to the cinema anymore, the Broadway is too small, too loud, and doesn't show many good films. I'm really excited by this new development, and I'm glad the planning committee chose the progressive way. It's a shame there aren't any more affordable housing. I definitely believe that's what we need to start building up into the sky rather than out into the countryside. This has been mentioned before. A large tower block would soak up a lot of affordable housing if it were to be made affordable housing. Where would you put something like that in Douglas, if it were to be built, that is? Do you think the thinking should be build up rather than build out? And also, they're promising a cinema, and a message in from Mary who said, wasn't the Middlemarch, wasn't that going to be where the new Palace Hotel is? If the current, because the current Palace Hotel was built in, what, 1966, 67? So that will be coming to the end. So if the Palace is going to move from Central Promenade and go to the Middlemarch, what will happen to the cinema? Well, presumably that will go because it's what's left of the ballroom, the Palace Lido ballroom. An 8-screen cinema is a thing of the past, though, says Charlie. I was in Liverpool for over a year and used to visit one of these complexes regularly. And most times there'll be as many as 3 people watching the films. Depends what time of day you went, Charlie, doesn't it? The same thing will happen. Well, we'll see, won't we? At the moment, we have. What do we have? We have the Broadway cinema by the Villa Marina, and we have the Palace cinema with 2 screens. Other venues do show films. Obviously, the Centenary Centre, the Air and Arts Centre shows films occasionally, and some films are shown, I think, at King William's College. But do you think now is the time for a multi-screen cinema? Would you go to a multi-screen cinema in the centre of Douglas? I know we're talking about the bus station supposed plans. Will the government be paying from taxpayers' money? I don't know whether it's part of what's called the Island Infrastructure Scheme. We talked about this. This is a scheme that's a few years old now, whereby the government incentivizes private operators to do things like this, and provided they satisfy all the requirements and all the boxes are ticked, when the thing is coming to an end, they get up to, I think, 25% back of the costs. But they've got to obviously do everything in the meantime. How about the government getting some money together and helping for the repair of the Queen's Pier in Ramsey instead of the public donating their life savings? It's embarrassing. The Ramsey Queen's Pier is a true gem of the Isle of Man. If the pier was in Douglas, it would have been done by now, says 764. Would you really want the government in charge of Ramsey Pier? Would you really want... Bearing in mind how much it end up... The new development on Lord Street would be a great addition to Douglas and bring it to life a dead area and give the marina a facelift. An air of prosperity instead of an air of dereliction, says John. Does the Isle of Man Fire and Rescue Service have appliances that can reach 40 metres in height, says Phil in Onken. This is 12 stories high. Well, I'm presuming that they've checked with the Fire and Rescue Service. I haven't heard anybody mention over the past couple of weeks how the Lord Street site has been cleared and looks somewhat respectable. The Harris fencing has been removed and the tarmac area cleared of rubbish. Haven't Man in Line regulars noticed the progress, says Phil. Well, thank you, Phil. At least you've noticed. That's one thing. Yes, Lord Street. Are there going to be public conveniences on the site of the new Lord Street site, says Trish. Well, that's important. We've talked about the lack of public conveniences around public loos around Douglas. And yes, the current plans submitted by the developer include public toilets as part of the scheme. Well, that's good because there's a flipping bus station next to it. The proposals will include a travel information centre with passenger waiting facilities and public toilets alongside the bus stands, the cinema and other uses. It's important to note that these plans have recently been recommended for refusal by the Isle of Man planning officer ahead of the planning committee meeting, but the planning committee this morning knocked them through. It was 3-3. And the casting vote from the chairman put them through. Part of the concerns were affordable housing and open space, not the lack of loos. That means the development in its current form isn't yet approved. Well, it is approved now to go ahead. So public conveniences are included in the developer's proposal, but the overall planning application could have been refused, but it hasn't been refused, so it's happening. Yes, there will be toilets there, but, and that helps. When callers complained about waiting lists, I said it would be more meaningful to know how many operations are actually being done. So well done to Julie Edge MHK for questioning the use of theatre time and highlighting that targets are being missed, which will impact waiting times, says Gaz. Thank you also to Hayley, who dropped a note in to say, I had the misfortune to go to ED, A&E, casualty as we used to call it last week. I didn't think it was going to be busy. It was absolutely chock-a-block. I was there in a total with somebody I was taking for 8 hours. There were no seats free, and the vending machine wasn't working. How on earth can they allow people to wait for up to 8 hours with the vending? Shouldn't somebody tell who operates the vending machine, and then they'll know about it? Also, there seemed to be people there, in my opinion, who weren't really. It wasn't an emergency. They should have gone to see their GP. Is it now the fact that people are going to the emergency department purely because they either can't get an appointment with a GP or can't be bothered to wait? Well, we'll see. Did you hear Gary Cluett talking about gambling on the Isle of Man? And this is important because a lot of our GDP comes from the e-gaming industry. And later on this year, we've got MoneyVal. The MoneyVal basically is they'll come and check and see if we're okay, and we may get a tick and we may not get a tick. I'm simplifying, but we need a tick. We need to be on the proper list. Gary Clewett, who is the political member for Treasury, Gary Clewett, MLC, says we're playing catch-up when it comes to regulating the gambling industry. He's taken a bill that would update legislation on gambling through LegCo. Another member's call for more evidence to be heard, Tanya August Phillips, says there's been considerable concern over the last year about over-regulation and a balance needs to be struck. This may seem fairly dry, but I'm sure everybody knows, and you will know somebody, or you'll know somebody who knows somebody, who works in the e-gaming industry, because it is huge on the Isle of Man. It generates millions for us. Gary Clewett and Tanya August Phillips.
It is a significant part of our economy. It employs a lot of very well-paid people on the island, and we have to be seen to be doing things correctly. You know, we've had, you know, there've been one or two scandals in the last year or so over gaming companies, and international regulators are looking at that very, very closely. One of the things that came out of our 2016 Moneyval evaluation was specifically around our gaming industry. Other jurisdictions that have gambling, who have in the last several years been subject to Moneyval assessments, have also had a very sharp focus on that industry. So it is very important that we bring our legislation in line with the international standards before we get to that assessment.
Behind closed doors, people working in the finance industry have been increasingly expressing concern that they are over-regulated.
Yes.
And on the one hand, you need to have good, relevant regulation which the world can trust. But on the other hand, you've got to make sure that that regulation doesn't stifle business, don't you?
Yeah, there's a very, very fine line between that effect on the economy and regulating and making sure that we're regulating fairly and making use of statutory and non-statutory toolkits in order to be able to do those things. There has been considerable concern, particularly over the course of the last year, from industry about what some individuals suggest might be over-regulation. I think that, you know, that balance does need to be struck, and the reason why I want this evidence stage is because I would like to see that balance struck between, like, with both regulators. Mm. I would like to see that balance struck, and struck well, and them learning from each other.
I have a lot of sympathy with people in the industry about over-regulation. The reality is that some of these regulations are quite onerous, but the fact is that they've become international standards. If you want to play in this space, you don't have a lot of choice.
We have to get this right, because the Moneyval stamp of approval is very, very important to us. Gary Clewett and Tanya August Phillips, MLCs.
This is the Isle of Man talking, the man in line.
My friend waited ages to get his car back from the garage. He only went in for a service, but they really messed him around. Told him it needed a part, and he's no idea what it's going to cost. I said next time, try Athol Garage. They offer fixed price menu servicing on all makes and models, so you know exactly what's being done and the full costs in advance. And you get a loan vehicle. As a franchise dealer, they may charge slightly more per hour, but will most likely take less time. Choose a reliable garage. Athol Garage Ballasalla. Not just Nissan.
1986.
At Manx Glass and Glazing, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. That's right. Manx Glass and Glazing have been delivering quality and stylish aluminium and UPVC windows and doors to the island since 1986. And we've spent four decades committed to developing our community, including investing in future generations through our apprenticeship scheme. Visit our showroom on Snugborough Trading Estate and see why we've been helping the island for 40 years. Trust Manx Glass and Glazing. Quality and style since 1986.
Offering a high-quality education from years 3 to 13, Benbridge Academy provides an alternative choice for students and families. Our online curriculum gives you the opportunity to take control of your child's education with a pathway that meets their individual needs. Small class sizes and excellent pastoral care allow our students the freedom to thrive. For information or to book a free trial, call 873 139 or download our prospectus at benbridgeacademy.co.uk. Embrace the future with Benbridge Academy.
Many people are struggling. You can help by volunteering or making a donation to Isle of Man Food Bank, whether it be food or essential items or financial support. Please call 646 999, brought to you by Descon Office Interiors.
Have you got your Manx Radio Gold open and closed door sign on display? If you put the sign in the entrance of your business, you could win 3 months of free advertising on Manx Radio Gold in 2026. Need a door sign? Email sales@manxradio.com and we'll get one straight to you. And if your door sign is already up, send us a photo and we'll put your business into the prize draw. Manx Radio Gold is the perfect soundtrack for your workplace, with fewer interruptions and only the greatest hits on earth. On your smart speaker and at gold.manxradio.com.
Manx Radio Gold.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
12:30 it is, and Robert's on now. Hi, Robert.
How you doing?
Well, very well, thanks.
Good weekend?
Well, you know, onward ever onward.
Yeah, housing and the budget, where are we up to?
In what way, Robert?
Well, I didn't see much talk of it, really, in terms of the 26 budget and housing being mentioned. It seemed to mostly go on personal expenditure, didn't it?
What would you like to happen?
I want more houses now.
Well,
definitely. We need more houses. We need more houses for the council houses.
Ah, so
we need more houses out in Patrick and, right. And Kirkmichael.
So these are more social houses you want?
Definitely, yeah.
Right, well, that's down to the government, isn't it? For the government providing money for that.
And the second thing is, how are we doing with the buses? Are they back to deal on Wednesday or what?
Well, hopefully they're going to get back. Well, they've threatened another four strikes. So at the moment, we don't quite know.
Well, they're the two main things at the moment that I'm concerned about is housing and buses. So I'm glad we get those two things sorted out. We'll have a good day.
Fantastic. Thank you, Robert.
All right, I'll see you later.
29 minutes before one, and let's get... Oh, Victoria's on with us now. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, everyone. It's just going back to when the Chief Constable was on, yeah. And he was talking about, you know, the incident with the masked police?
Yeah.
The armed response. And he said that's... He thinks they should be masked to protect their identity. But are they required by law to display a number on the uniform so that, just say, somebody was overzealous and used excessive force?
Yeah.
And, you know, God forbid there would be, you know, a serious injury to the person they're trying to apprehend or even a death. You wouldn't want all the police officers blamed for that if it was just one person. So are they required by law to display a number, do you know, or anybody know?
Normally they are required to display a name or a number so you know who you're dealing with. In this particular circumstance, I mean, can you see the Chief Constable's point of view about protecting an officer's identity? Because that could fly around. Because it's all because of social media, isn't it? Because somebody could take a photo and it would fly around the Isle of Man and the world within a couple of minutes. And that could, you know, prejudice all sorts of things. So, I mean, whilst, of course, it is fairly forbidding, say, mass police officers, it's only going to be in certain circumstances. What do you think?
Well, I think if they were assigned a number, and it might be just for these incidents...
I see where I'm coming from.
I'm not saying, you know, yes, I understand what he's saying about protecting their ID, but they're superiors because there's CCTV on the buses, isn't there?
Yeah, oh, I see.
And quite, you know, around and about to record these things.
Yeah, so you're saying give them a number, not their constable number, if you...
I'm wanting to know what is the law, and do they, you know, and yes, I do understand about their safety, but also... So if something happened and say it was just one officer that had done something and then everybody says, oh, you know, the police brutality, other officers who are following procedure could get blamed.
Yeah.
Obviously CCTV would show, but it would also show the superiors who done it, so not everybody got blamed.
Yeah. Point taken. And again, this is, hopefully, this is few and far between occasions like this.
Yeah, I just wondered if someone could clarify whether that was the law that they display, because okay. I don't know. It's just something I thought they had to do. And yes, I do understand about protecting their identity.
Yeah.
And there was another thing. Somebody phoned in saying that they'd reported, I think it was a car crime, and six times they'd reported it.
Yeah. This is an abandoned, well, a vehicle that's untaxed and uninsured.
Yeah. So, you know, if you've reported it that many times and nothing has been done, you know, if you fail to act on information received about a crime, is that breaking the law? If it's, you know, if somebody's directing the police not to act on it, are they breaking the law when they do that?
Yeah, well, very, and hopefully, if anybody knows, then put it this way: if you watch the video, the chief constable wasn't too pleased about that, and I think
I don't go online or anything, so you know, I'm not up to date with a lot of things, but it's just to clarify what is the law on these things, because that's quite bad if somebody's phone reported it six times and nothing has been done.
So you're asking what is the law if you've reported a crime and nothing happens, surely somebody must be responsible for that.
Yes, yes. And are they, by not acting upon information received with evidence, you know, obviously there's evidence to support it, are they breaking the law when they do that?
Okay, all right. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling today, Victoria.
All right, thanks a lot. See ya.
All right, 25 to 1 now. That lady about wearing ID numbers, the bus driver should also wear an ID numbered badge so the pupil can make any reports they need to reference. We've got some more news on the Lord Street bus station. Beth Espy is news editor from Max Radio. What's the latest, Beth?
Yes, Andy. Well, we need to apologise for an earlier version of this story about the Lord Street bus station site, which stated the committee had voted to approve the plans. What's actually happened today is that plans for that 12-storey multi-purpose facility on the site of the former Lord Street bus station have actually moved a step closer. The planning committee voted to disagree with a report recommending the application be refused. Chair of that committee, Rob Callister, MHK, he had the deciding vote after the panel was split 3 in favour and 3 against. But we do apologise that the earlier version of this story stated the committee had voted to approve the plan. So there is a clarification needed on that one.
OK. Okay, so in words of one syllable, they haven't been approved, but they've not been disapproved.
That's basically it in a nutshell, yes. And you can see the details of the plans on the Manx Radio website, and further discussions certainly to be had on this one.
And what's the next stage now?
Well, there will be another planning committee discussion on it. I guess they will go through the conditions that's associated with this and then make a decision actually on whether it is going to go ahead in the form that it is indicated. The plans, as we know, include a multi-screen cinema, bus facilities and 85 apartments. That report that was considered by the committee this morning recommended the project be refused because of concerns over the lack of affordable housing included. And so a list of conditions will be considered by that committee at its next sitting, and then it will decide whether or not to grant planning permission.
Okay, Beth, thank you very much indeed. So it's not going ahead, it might go ahead, and we'll find out later. Thanks for that. Wow, it's a real Manx solution to it, isn't it? David's with us now. Hi, David. We've lost David. David's on Blighted Line 1. Whatever happened to the plans to build a cinema on Lord Street? We need something like that down south, preferably one showing films only in the Manx language. There's nothing to keep us entertained in the south, says... The armed police don't wear face masks when they go into coffee shops, says John. Well, they're not on duty then, are they? It's law for a police officer to tell members of the public the number and rank and the station that they work from. Under law, says Simon, the Bride Road is going to be part of Atlantis very soon, but no talk of it anywhere. Is there a plan? Perhaps we could build the proposed King Canute Memorial Wall for the Ramsey Harbour and the Bride Road. Is it? It's not liable to get underwater, is it? Howard's back. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Andy. Now, I don't know if it's still applicable, but as you know, I've mentioned before, I drove coaches in the 1970s. And the drivers, all drivers, had to have a badge. And it was issued by the Road Traffic Commission. And I've still got mine, actually. 695 was the number. I've got the old badge upstairs. And they had to have that displayed on their coats or on a shirt, but prominently so people could see it. And it said, in the older times, driver, and mine was 695, or conductor. So now whether that's still in being or not, I don't know, but it should be. So it means the drivers should, if they have them, display them.
Hmm.
And
right.
It is a means of identification, and they used to have three inspectors going around, say, on the coaches, and they would come along and they'd check the coach, and they would check you for your badge, and if you didn't have it, you got chastised, and if you did it deliberately more than once or twice like that, they could take the badge off you.
I wonder.
And that meant that you were unemployed then, in a sense.
Do we still have bus inspectors?
I don't know. I haven't a clue what they do these days.
Okay.
But that is an inspector is put there for the vehicles, for the drivers and things. But the badges, they were issued by the Road Traffic Commission. And as I say, these were a solid badge, brass badge, and they were enamel front or plastic fronted, and they had your number on and what you did, a driver, and it was clear. You could you couldn't hide it anywhere, or you weren't allowed to hide it, but you had to wear that in a prominent place on your coat or your shirt.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Driver 695.
Yeah. Thanks, then.
Right.
Cheers, Andy.
Right, 19 minutes before one. We'll try Blighted Line 1 again. Is David there?
Yes, is Andy there?
Thank the Lord for that.
Great. I just want to talk about policy and planning.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that Beth's clarified something there. The recommendation from the officer, who's the technical person for planning, recommended refusal for certain things was the number of apartments, the height of the building, how it looks in the scape of the vicinity it's based in. But the other thing which really concerns me is there was no affordable housing or what we call Section 13 agreement regarding where affordable units could be put in compensation for them not having them on the particular site, which is fine. Because it happened years ago when Dandara built stuff at Lake Road, they built stuff at B&Q it was, and they ticked the box. So we've either got to have some money in our pocket to build first-time buyers somewhere or affordable units from this company.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, the question I'm putting out there is to the Planning Committee, if they're listening as well, is would they not put a bond up? And that would be the way that the safeguards, like Howard said there, is there going to be, there'll be a four-year build program for it, maybe, where you've got to start. But if it happens to go past 4 years, we're stuck with an eyeball, aren't we? We're stuck with an issue there.
And as you say, I think when I read the application, it said that they'd look at this, what they call commuted sums, aren't they, for if they're not putting affordable stuff in. They'd look at the viability of the project to see how much the commutable, because the commutable sum was going to be over £1 million.
Yeah. Well, that's the issue, you see, Andy. If you're doing these schemes and whatever, and they're going to want government money, they may want government money out of it. I don't know what's going to happen. But we've also got, about 15, one day I must come back onto you and go through the list again. We've got the likes of Park Road School, we've got the Summerland site, two pubs, the Quarter Bridge, and the other one down at Derby Road there. We've got loads of property that's under custodial what I call custodial thing for the taxpayer.
Yeah.
What are we with them? We've got M&Co as well. Went past there this morning. M&Co and the building which used to be the Jab Centre. That's all empty. And the school at the back.
Mm.
You know the school there that was moved?
Yes, and Thomas's.
Yes, Thomas's. What are we doing with these things, you know? Is nobody taking an insight into what? If you don't want them, why don't they put them up for auction or sell them?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Appreciate that, right. David. Thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you. Police officers and the Isle of Man normally wear a visible identification number on the uniform and are expected to give their name and number if reasonably asked. In ordinary public interactions, an officer should be able to tell you their number. In specific operations, for example, when armed police are deployed and safety or operational security is a concern, the number might not be displayed or given at that moment, but the officer should still be identifiable afterward if needed for feedback or a complaint, is the official word. Dewan's with us now. Hi, Dewan.
Oh, naughty newsroom, Andy, getting that wrong, eh?
Well, how was your weekend? Not 100% wrong, just not 100% right.
Jumping the gun. Did you have a good weekend?
Well, you know, it was an interesting weekend.
Oh, right. We won't go any further then. briefly on last week when I was talking to Russ Foster, I still hold the line on my thoughts on policing on the island. The statistics that they were giving are statistics from the UK. And I noticed, again, a bit of mission creep there and what he was saying. The original... quite a while ago when this was announced was we want armed police to be on the streets because it the response time from getting from the headquarters to an incident had changed when Russ was on and said now we want police officers actually holding the equipment because of the response time to get back to the vehicle for it. So we see this mission creep coming in here to justify the stuff, that slight change of wording. So I'm very conscious of really do we actually need this still?
The thing is that, Dewan, everybody wants the Isle of Man to be like the Isle of Man used to be. We all love the fact that it's bucolic, it's the countryside, it's not an urban built-up area, and we want things to be the way that they were. Sadly, we're surrounded in other areas by vipers, and we do have to protect ourselves, don't we?
We do indeed, but this is not new, Andy. We've been surrounded by vipers for a long time. I'll take you back to the Viking Apart many, many years ago, which used to be a lot of IRA people used to be in there. So we've always been surrounded by vipers. This is now just we're in a different era, but let's not kid ourselves. We've always had people use this as a backdoor into England.
Yeah.
And on the changing face of the island, which again, that comes into the same thing, with this, the bus station, Lord Street bus station, totally agree with Howard about the amount of neglected sites around Douglas and the beautification that it needs or something that to be done. But I think the biggest problem with this is the skyline that's going to be changed and the 12 stories. I think if this would have been a 7 or 8 story building, that would have been accepted a lot better. Yeah, there's definitely a need for improvement in Douglas. It's lost its identity many years ago, but I think it's the actual size of it going upwards. And again, this will fit in with the island scheme, and of course the Arab reports and the 20 minute cities to try and densify areas to get people all in one area so they can walk to wherever they want to be and not use vehicles. So again, that there's these reports that they're following, which probably fits into that build for them. And again, I suppose if we go back to when the Lord Street flats were built, I suppose probably people would have said then, back then, it was probably looking at a 20-minute city. People pushing people into a town area where they can walk everywhere and not have to take transport. But yeah, changing face of the island, and I just think it's the size of that that's the problem, and not the actual build.
Yeah, okay. I think, by the way, if something is built, there should be a statue of Ted Bettley there. What do you think?
Sonny, you and me, Andy, that'll know that name now.
Oh, wrestling fans everywhere know about Dr. Death, Ted Bettley. That's
Dr. Death, Ted Bettley, yeah. I've had many a times on Ted's kitchen floor with his elbow in my back to your me and you move.
Thanks, Stuart.
Take care, Andy.
All right, 12 minutes before one. MoneyVal, we're talking about MoneyVal. It's an independent evaluator of how well jurisdictions like the Isle of Man comply with international anti-money laundering and counter-financing of terrorism standards. AML is, if any, you know anybody who's involved in the finance industry, AML haunts them, anti-money laundering. So what it does and why does it matter to the Isle of Man? Well, it assesses the Isle of Man's systems for preventing money laundering and terrorist financing, benchmarking them against global standards set by the Financial Action Task Force, FATFA. It reviews the laws, regulations and enforcement, including how well banks, trusts and other entities comply with reporting and transparency requirements. Moneyval publishes a detailed report with findings and recommendations for improvement, could do better, all that stuff. It improves the Isle of Man's reputation internationally by showing investors and international partners that financial crime safeguards are strong and effective. And it helps protect our economy because jurisdictions with high standards avoid being blacklisted or graylisted, which can reduce investment, increase compliance costs, and harm confidence in the financial services sector. We're on the whitelist at the moment. We don't want to be on the greylist or the blacklist. In simple terms, Moneyval reviews and strengthens the Isle of Man's financial crime protections, which helps preserve the integrity, competitiveness, and reputation of our financial services. So that's what Moneyval is. For everybody who's been asking, why do you keep talking about Moneyval?
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
Let's get some boots on the ground for this year's most memorable charity challenge. The 50K Challenge Walk on Sunday the 19th of April in support of Hospice Isle of Man and the island's firefighters. This special non-competitive event brings together community, endurance and breathtaking scenery from Peel to Ramsey for two really great causes. To find out more and to enter, visit hospice.org.im/charitywalk. Kindly supported by Canaccord Wealth.
One architectural design company has particular expertise in achieving planning approval for a wide variety of projects, from landmark buildings to spectacular homes. Talk to the experts at Ellis Brown and get your project off the ground. For excellence in design, search Ellis Brown.
Whether starting a new business or building up your existing business, come and talk to the accounts and tax experts at Nicola Bowker & Co. With their holistic approach to business advice, Nicola Bowker & Co. will work with you to achieve success. For accounts that work, call 861271.
It's Tuesday at 5.30 here on Manx Radio. Join Kieran Kermode and myself, Simon Carr, for another Countryside programme.
We'll be hearing from past and present members of the Southern Young Farmers Club as they celebrate their 80th year.
I catch up with marine biologist for the Manx Wildlife Trust, Laura Howe, to get more of an explanation about the conglomerate of seals that were at the Point of Ayr last weekend. And I catch up with the secretary of the Ramsey Noncan Fur and Feather Society, Nigel Taylor, to give me a heads up on what's going to be happening in their forthcoming show in March.
That's all in Countryside Tuesday here on Manx Radio at 5.30. And don't forget, you can download or subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
It's 8 minutes before one. Manx Utilities says Brian are asking landowners if they have parcels of 5 acres to lease or sell for solar panels. I think greenfields shouldn't be used for this purpose. There are acres of industrial rooftops where solar panels could be installed before building solar farms on the Isle of Man. Solar panels are part of the island's infrastructure and Manx Utilities should carry out the proper costings and get on with it. Another concern is if the planning permissions granted on greenfields for solar panels, it could later become a gateway for housing development if the solar panels don't proceed, says Brian. There's a message in from Iris who said, didn't I'm trying to think, where was it? It was around Billown Mansion. There was a field full of solar panels. I don't know whether they're still there or not. Summerland will be an ideal place for this high-rise development. It will be blend into the cliffside and a memorial to all the victims could be displayed on one of the floors for relatives and friends to honour them. Building on the bus station, I think, is absolute madness. The Manx Electric Railway is offering an excellent service during the bus strike and it's a wonderful way to commute. If the strike continues, the steam railway should be used as an option for for transporting people. A Manxman's living in Dubai and says it feels like business as usual, despite the ongoing tensions in Dubai. Speaking on Manx Radio, this is from Saturday, Steve Noon, who used to work at Manx Radio. Steve Noon was one of our airtime executives. He's 4 miles off an American base in Dubai, says there's been action overhead, but he's not overly concerned.
Plenty of missile action overhead, but I must stress, you know, we're in a fantastic country and well looked after. And I think that if anyone has a Manx family, I wouldn't be overly concerned. It's 2026, and obviously it's not obvious, but there's targeted strikes in the region, and very accurate targeted strikes. But we are surrounded by US bases, and a base about 4 miles away from where I am now. So obviously you can sort of see these strikes, and more so the counter strikes on the missiles, which have been sort of deflected. Intercepted would be the correct wording.
In terms of on the ground, you know, are people, I know you said people, if you have Manx families, you shouldn't be too worried. So is there a feeling of safety on the ground then?
Yes, I would say so. At the moment, obviously there's strikes going all around, which is in the news and that, but I think the sentiment here is seems to be pretty business as usual, I would say. A lot of people just be working from home from next week, I would have thought. I'm just up at the golf club close to my house. I'm about half a mile away, and you know, people just seem to be going along. I mean, people are just maybe that their activities have been sort of staying more around home really, rather than going out and about. That seems to be the advice from the government anyway. So, but I don't think there's any. I don't feel like I'm in some sort of a war zone. You just happen to be 4 or 5 miles away from missile strikes, but seems to be missile interceptions, I'd say. And they seem to be going overhead, but as I said, they seem to be targeted at military positions, I believe.
Steve Noon, Manxman, and I'm glad to see he's keeping his golf up. So he's at the golf club near the missile interceptions. If you're listening to Man in Line, by the way, and I know there's a big expat, Manx expat community in Dubai, if you're listening and you want to contribute, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to drop a note to newsroom@manxradio.com, newsroom, all one word, @manxradio.com. If you're Manx and you're in Dubai and you just want to let us know how you're coping, what the situation is, what the government's doing for you, what the proposal is, perhaps you're even on holiday. There's a business community, a Manx business community, but also you may be on holiday. If you want to get in touch, email newsroom@manxradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. And first and foremost, we hope that everybody stays safe. I'm sitting near the 9-story block of flats in Ramsey. Once they're there, you don't really notice them, says this correspondent. So another 3 floors above that height won't have much of an effect, will it? Says Sue in Balath. Being Manx isn't easy. I think it's time to embrace the change at the old bus station, the derelict empty spaces that blight the Isle of Man. Unfortunately, it's no longer a case of the Manx living the old simple way of life. The Manx now number less than 30% of the population, and although the Manx will never die out, we may eventually reach a point where only 10% of the population is true Manx. Government policy since 1990, the pursuit of money, has changed our way of life. The only way to save what's truly Manx may be through protest, but that doesn't seem to be the way anymore. The Manx have always adapted to change for the last 1,000 years. Thank you for that. And that's it, back with another Open Line tomorrow. Remember, Nick the Pharmacist is on Thursday. Thanks to Chris producing today on Man in Line.
WINT.